Pastor Doug and worship team. One of the benefits of me not having to preach every week, that's Pastor Doug's job. It's usually a few weeks in between times I get to speak, is I get a little bit more time to work on a message and build up maybe some stories that might fit with that. And normally I open up with some, you know, whimsical tale from the life of our family. And so this week, my family knew that I was teaching, and so they said, well, what story are you going to use this week? And I said, well, I'm teaching on anger, so you might want to leave the family out of that one. All right. So I'm going to talk about my dog, all right, since we're talking about things that make us angry sometimes, all right? Here's our pet. That's Pepper. She's 10, or she'll be 10 in October, and I have a love-hate relationship with Pepper. She's a mutt. She's got about a quarter black lab in her, and then some other various breeds, okay? We adopted her when she was a little puppy, just, you know, a few weeks old, and really, we got her to, prevent us from having kids sooner than we wanted, okay? So, my wife was probably ready to be a mom. I wasn't quite ready to be a dad yet. We thought, let's try out on the puppy, okay, see how that goes. And so Trina has pictures of Pepper when she was 3 weeks old and 6 weeks old and then 3 months old. And she'd take her flip book to school and show the other teachers. And there's a picture of Pepper as a six-week puppy, like, nuzzled in her shoulder. I'm like, oh, goodness, you need a baby. We're just not there yet, all right? One of the things that just drives me nuts about my dog is her behavior during storms. All right, we've joked that we don't need a weather radio because we've got a dog who just goes ballistic anytime a storm moves in. All right, it's just uncanny. As soon as the thunderstorm comes, she starts panting, she starts pacing, she starts shivering. If it's in the middle of the night, when oftentimes it is, she'll get on my bed and she's like straddling me, saliva dripping off her tongue onto me as I'm sleeping. It's a fun experience, all right? If it's during the day, when we're at work, she'll make a mess, if you know what I mean, wherever she is, all right? And so it came to a head last summer. It was the end of July. It was that, you know, week we got all that rain, and Tarina was out of town. She was seeing her sister, and another storm came through. It was 10 o'clock at night. And I went to let Pepper out for the last time so that she was good to go. And the storm hadn't quite come yet, but as soon as I let her out, she was gone. She took off around the back of our garage, hopped our fence. We could spend an hour about all the time she's hopped our fence. Hopped our fence and just took off. And now she's a black dog. And it's 10 o'clock at night. And my kids are sleeping. I'm like, how am I going to find this thing? And so that the thought goes through my mind, my first thought was, fine. You think it's better out there? You think you got a better bed out there, better food out there, more love? Go find it. I'm done with you. All right? That wasn't the response I went with, but that was my first response. All right? My second thing was like, well, I could load all the kids in the van and we could drive up and down the neighborhood. I'm like, oh, I just don't want to wake them up at 10 o'clock at night. So what I did is I knew her escape routes because she's done this before. So I ran up a block and I would run back quick and check on the kids. And then I would run another block and then run back quick, check on the kids. And finally, the third time I ran, I found her and she was just roaming and I just started laying into her. You know, like, how could you do this, Pepper? You bad dog, bad, 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 blah, blah, blah. It really looked like this cartoon from The Far Side, if you ever remember seeing The Far Side. You know, what we say to dogs, like they can hear us, right? Pepper, you lousy mutt, how could you, blah, blah, blah. You know, what they hear, blah, 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 Pepper, blah, 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 blah. It didn't matter what I was saying. But I was angry, all right? So last month in May, I was taking the 180 students. We were going to Minneapolis for the day. And I knew some weather was going to be coming through, or had the potential to. And so I knew Pepper would be by herself for the whole day. I'm like, I don't want to come home and just have the house just torn to shreds or a big mess there. One of our really good friends, we call her a dog whisperer. She said, you know, there's a product you can buy at Wayne and Mary's that helps your dog out with that. You've got to be kidding. So I stop at Wayne and Mary's just over there on Sycamore, and I go and I say, I'm a little sheepish, but do you sell something that can help my dog during storms? Like, oh yeah, it's at the end of this aisle. So they take us over there, and we buy her Calm, okay? Now look at that puppy. Just nice, docile, and it's loaded up on Calm, all right? So the night before we left, I gave Pepper a couple of Calm pills. And then the morning we left, I gave her 3 so that she was just nice and tranquil when we were gone. And amazingly enough, it's worked. So that every time a storm comes, we just give Pepper her Ritalin, that's what I call it, just, you know, calm her down, you know, just bring her back down. And it works. It's worked great, all right? So if the only thing you get out of this today, there's a product you can buy for your dogs, all right? We're not selling it here, but you can find it there, all right? Well, it's important, I think, not only to consider, you know, what makes us angry and how we handle it, but you know, what are those things in life that cause us to be angry? And we're going to look at this story in John chapter 2 where we see Jesus demonstrating some anger and what caused him to be angry and what did he do with it. So turn to John 2. We're looking at verses 13 through 22. We'll have the words on the screen behind me. It's also on page 810 if you're using the Bibles in the rows ahead of you. And we'll read the whole story here. It was nearly time for the Jewish Passover celebration, so Jesus went to Jerusalem. In the temple area, he saw merchants selling cattle, sheep, and doves for sacrifice. He also saw dealers at tables exchanging foreign money. Jesus made a whip from some ropes and chased them out of the temple. He drove out the sheep and the cattle, scattered the money changers' coins over the floor, and turned over their tables. Then, going over to the people who sold doves, he said, "Get these things out of here. Stop turning my Father's house into a marketplace." Then his disciples remembered this prophecy from the scriptures. Passion for God's word will consume me. God's house, excuse me, will consume me. But the Jewish leaders demanded, "What are you doing? If God gave you authority to do this, show us a miraculous sign to prove it." "All right," Jesus replied, "destroy this temple and I will raise it up in 3 days." "What?" they exclaimed. "It has taken 46 years to build this temple and you can rebuild it in 3 days?" But when Jesus said this temple, he meant his own body. After he was raised from the dead, his disciples remembered he had said this, and they believed both the scriptures and what Jesus had said. All right. I want to just jump in right away and talk about what this passage isn't about. I think it's typical. It's a kind of a familiar story. And I think we turn to this passage and we say, you know, there should be no buying or selling of anything in church. All right. So when you came in this morning, we have that welcome center. We sell coffee, okay? And so some people might say, look, you're buying and selling coffee. That shouldn't be allowed because we've got this story here where Jesus drives out all the merchandising or all the commerce out of the temple, okay? And at first glance, it does appear that that's what Jesus is upset with, okay? Let's dig a little bit deeper and find out maybe it's just more than just the buying and selling that Jesus was mad with, okay? We know from the passage that it's Passover time, okay? And so a couple of weeks ago, Pastor Doug taught on the tabernacle, and he had showed us, you know, all the various, you know, aspects and areas within the tabernacle. At this point, the temple has replaced the tabernacle to where the Jewish people would come and worship God, okay? It's Passover time, so it's a big annual celebration that Jewish people were expected to attend if they could. And a good, devout Jew would do 2 things when coming to the Passover. They would bring their sacrifice, their prize sacrifice, typically a lamb, okay, or a sheep, and then they would bring coins or money to pay the temple tax with, okay? Now, if you lived, you know, in or around Jerusalem, this was no big deal, okay? You would just get up, you got your flock, you'd pick the best one, the one that didn't have any, you know, blemishes or defects, and you would, you know, grab a couple of drachma coins, which is what the coin needed to pay the temple tax. You just, you know, get those out of your coin jar, if you will, and you'd walk to the temple and celebrate the Passover. You were good to go, okay? Problem was, it wasn't just the locals who went to Passover. This was a national celebration for all of Israel, for all Jewish people. So people came from all over the region to celebrate Passover. We've got a map here of what Israel looked like during Jesus' time, okay? And that yellow star, that's right by where Jerusalem is, okay? You can see You know, Bethlehem is there, Jericho is there, Emmaus is there. So if you were in one of these outlying areas, you could probably just take your animal, go to Passover, you'd be good to go. But if you're from the north, where that red star is, up by Galilee, where Jesus spent a lot of time there as well, you got the towns of Cana, Nazareth, Capernaum is up there, okay, Bethsaida. You're at least a 1 day, if not 2 days, journey from where the temple is. Okay, so for those folks, it's a very Jewish area. For those folks to celebrate Passover, there's a lot more work involved. Okay, it's like packing for a trip, right? So they gotta you know, load up the animals, and they gotta make sure they got enough food, and make sure they got enough supplies, and make sure the DSIs are charged up and ready to go, and make sure the DVDs are stacked. You know, it's like you're going on a journey. All right, make sure that you can survive this. All right, and so when you're going on a trip like that, you got a choice. You know, do we bring our sacrifice with us? Because if you bring your sacrifice with you, a couple of different things could happen. Your sacrificial lamb could get injured. It could get, you know, sick. Maybe another animal comes when your party is traveling and takes it out. Okay? And so I imagine, you know, a husband and a wife, as they're getting ready to pack up for the Passover, having a little bit of a debate, right? Should we bring the sacrifice or not? I don't know. Well, let's bring it. We'll save some money. Okay, so we pack up the sacrifice, and then along the way, sacrifice breaks a leg, all right? And then, you know, one of the spouses is like, see, I told you we shouldn't have brought the sacrifice. We should have just bought one there. Well, how was I supposed to know it was going to break its leg? You never listened to me. I don't want to be listening to you now. You know, it's just all this kind of just banter back and forth, okay? But there was travel tension back in the biblical times too, okay? Not just for those of us who travel today. But you had to, you had that question, what do we do? Okay? And so the leaders of the temple attempted to solve this problem by providing sacrifices right there for people who had to travel. So you could go to the temple. If you didn't have a sacrifice, you could buy one. Alright? If you didn't have a lamb to offer, the temple leaders were just providing a service. They're saying, look, we realize that people are traveling from all over different parts. We know that you need a sacrifice. It's what our scriptures say. So we're just going to have some available for you. Okay, it'll cost you a little bit, but, you know, there you go. The same was true with the temple tax. It had to be paid with what was called a drachma coin. Okay? Well, what if you were from a different region that didn't have that currency? There's all kinds of currencies floating around. What if you didn't have that coin? What if you didn't have exact change? That's where the money changers came into place. Again, just providing a service. Okay? The leaders were trying to recognize a need and trying to meet that need in the beginning. Okay? And for me, it's not that behavior that's wrong. We'll get to what's wrong here in just a minute. Okay? I don't think Jesus, if he were to come through the doors of Hillcrest this morning and see us selling coffee, would go, oh, you're selling coffee in my house. I don't think that he'd have quite that response. Okay? Here at Hillcrest, we recognize that we have an opportunity to do some good in the world by partnering with Land of a Thousand Hills Coffee. Okay? And we buy a bag of coffee for $12, and we sell it to you for $12, and $3 to $4 of every bag goes to right back to the coffee grower. Coffee is one of these industries where the farmers haven't exactly been paid what they should be paid, and so fair trade coffee is trying to right that wrong a little bit, okay, by paying the farmers a living wage, okay. And so here at Hillcrest, we're just partnering with that organization, trying to give us an opportunity to do good there. It's not buying or selling. It is buying or selling, but it's not wrong. So what has bothered Jesus so much in this passage? It's what these practices have morphed into. And they have become, they have started out as services needed for people, valuable services that people needed, and they have turned into a greedy, exploitive distraction from what was supposed to be happening in the temple. So that temple tax, if you didn't have the right coin, you need to exchange that coin to the drachma coin. The money changers would charge you 8% interest on that. Now, maybe that was what their cost was. We don't know. But what most of the money changers were doing is they weren't just charging 8% interest. They would charge 10 or 15% interest. And they would take that extra 2 or 5% or 7%, whatever it was, and they'd pocket that amount. So you're paying 8% just to change your coin plus an additional, I don't know, 2, 5, whatever percent, and they were keeping that. And then there was a transaction fee, all right? and the transaction fee went right to the pockets of the temple leaders. Okay? So you were coming changing your coin because you needed to. This was your ticket into the temple, if you will. And they were adding costs, not for the benefit of the temple, but for the benefit of themselves. And those sacrifices, those turned into offering people that really needed sacrifice, legitimate service, they turned that into a bit of a monopoly, right? Because if they're offering the temple-approved sacrifices, guess what? They can charge whatever they want, right? Some people might even walk up with their sacrifice, they thought it was pretty good. Ah, looks good, no defects, no blemishes. I'm sorry, that doesn't meet the temple standards. So now you're going to have to buy our temple-approved lamb. And guess what? It's going to cost you a premium. So what started out as good and beneficial services had morphed into a greedy exploitation of people who were coming to worship. And that's the first thing that's got Jesus so upset in this passage, is the outrageous presence of human greed and the distraction it was providing to people who were wanting to worship his Father. One of the most common misquotes from Scripture is that money is the root of all evil. But what actually Paul says in his letter to Timothy is that it's the love of money that's the root of all evil. And in our story here at the temple, we clearly see the love of money trumping everything else. And Jesus says in Matthew 6:24 that we cannot serve both God and money. And so I want to just pause for a minute and talk about how do we guard against greed from overcoming our souls and taking the place that Jesus ought to have in our lives. I think one of the best things that we can do is just to practice generosity. Practice giving. That's not a plea for giving to here at Hillcrest. That may be the case for you. It's just a plea to be a giver in your life. Maybe it's, you know, feeding South Dakota and helping people who don't have food. Maybe it's World Vision and the good things they do throughout our country and throughout this world. Maybe it's on your own. You know people who have needs and you're just going to do it anonymously. You're going to buy them groceries, or you're going to put gas in their tank, or you're going to help them out with the bill. I don't know. But I know that when you and I practice giving, when we give tangibly, what we're saying is, God, I trust you to do with that amount what you want to do with it, and I put my faith in you more than my bank balance, more than what my account says I have. It's really hard if you're giving sacrificially, if you're giving in ways that hurt, if you're giving in ways that cost you something, where you can't afford to do something, or you can't afford to buy something, or you can't afford to go somewhere. If you're giving in ways that cost you, that's really hard for greed to come in, because your focus is so much on what you're giving towards. Make it that much harder for you and I to succumb to greed. Why don't you check out this video on greed before we go on?
Greed is something that many people struggle with. It can sneak up on you without you realizing it. For instance, I was sitting in church thinking about getting another Ferrari, and the offering plate came around for the second time. This offering was for starving children in Africa. That's when I realized what greed is. Greed is taking a second offering to feed kids I don't even know, and trying to take my Ferrari money from me and spend it on something other than Ferraris. I tried to rebuke the pastor of his greedy ways after church, but he must have been blinded by greed, because he didn't seem to understand. Oh well, I ended up buying two Ferraris, but I must get more. These have been Deep Thoughts from a Shallow Christian.
All right, some fun with that, but you get the idea, right, of what greed can look like. There's something else that's got Jesus pretty upset in this passage, okay? And it's where these transactions were taking place, okay? On the screen for you, we've got kind of a sketch of what the temple would have looked like, or might have looked like at this day. And again, it really patterns after that tabernacle that Pastor Doug taught on a couple of weeks ago. But if you look at the yellow arrows, you're going to see what's called the Court of Gentiles, Most scholars believe that the buying and the selling, the exchanging of money, the selling of the sacrifices was happening here in the court of the Gentiles. Now, Gentiles weren't allowed into the actual temple. So the court of Gentiles was designed as a way for Gentile people who wanted to worship God to be able to do just that. It was designed to allow them to approach God in that way. It was a symbol that communicated to the world that this was a place, the temple was a place where anyone, all peoples, could come and worship God. But the merchants had taken over that space, and they had set up shop in the space reserved for the non-Jews and their participation in worship. And they believed that their buying and selling of animals and their changing of the money was more important, trumped the needs of the Gentiles who couldn't go any farther into the temple and simply wanted to worship God. It symbolizes that the Jewish religion had lost her way a little bit, that it was no longer interested in being this blessing to the nations that God told Abraham in Genesis chapter 12, but rather that it would seek material blessing in spite of whatever negative impact happened to other peoples. The Jewish leaders mistakenly believed that the Passover and worship at the temple existed for themselves and to benefit their system, forgetting that worship of God is to be for the benefit of all. I believe that any time a church, whether intentionally or unintentionally, makes it difficult for a group of people to worship, but that church really isn't any different from the money changers and the people who are buying and selling here in this passage. And you can pretty much name the issue, and you can see examples where churches have struggled to do the right thing when it comes to who can or cannot worship, depending on what they think. Some of these topics might be like race, right? Where if you're not from the same race as a majority of the church, that you're not free or allowed to participate in worship. And we might think, you know, Brian, it's 2011, that's not an issue. It still is an issue. Just a couple months ago, our senior pastor was let go from a rather large church in the southeast because he decided to baptize 6 African-American boys. The senior pastor wrote this: even though the church leadership assured me that racial integration wouldn't be a problem during the interview process, a handful of the high-dollar folks revolted and had me removed without the church's knowledge. Disability, where if you're disabled, you have a disability of some sort, you're not allowed to participate or you're going to have a difficult time worshiping. Just this month, a large church in North Carolina asked a boy with cerebral palsy and his mom to be removed from worship because they were distracting other worshipers. Sexuality. If you're something other than heterosexual, you're going to have a difficult time worshiping. And just this week, Dr. Albert Moeller, who's the president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, caught a lot of heat for saying that there was, in his opinion, a lot of homophobia in Southern Baptist churches and that was a sin that needed to be repented of. And we could go on and on about big hot-button issues that churches say if you're on the wrong side, if you're not allowed to worship, you're prevented from worshiping. Let's flip it. What if it was the issue that you dealt with that a church said prevented you from worshiping? What if it was the issue that I deal with that a church said, well, you know what, because you deal with that issue, you're not allowed to worship here? What if the church said, you know what, you're an overeater, and it's clear that you have a hard time with food, and it's evident that you put more faith in the food on your plate than the Creator who allows that food to grow so that it can be on your plate. And you know what? Because you struggle with obesity, you're not allowed to worship here. Or what if we said, you know what? We know you're judgmental. We know you have a hard time with the speck or the log in your own eye, but you have an easy time recognizing the speck in other people's eyes. And because you're judgmental, you're not allowed to worship here. Or what if we said, you're a gossip. We know you have loose lips. We know that whenever someone tells you something, it just gets spread all over. And because of that behavior, I'm sorry, you can't participate in worship here. Or what if we said, you know what? You've been coming to church a long time, and we haven't seen much change in your life. And because of that, because you're a bit of a hypocrite, we don't see you living the same way through the week as we see you on Sunday. I'm sorry. You're not allowed to worship here. I mean, pick your issue. And what if that was the rule? What if the very thing that we struggled with was the very thing that prevented us from worshiping? The Gentiles couldn't change their race. They were coming to worship, and they were being crowded out by the buying and the selling that was taking place. The purpose of the court of the Gentiles was to make it easier for that group of people to worship, not harder. I think the heart of the story of Jesus driving out these people who were buying and selling in the temple really boils down to purpose. And what was the reason that the people were coming to Passover? Were they coming because it was a ritual that they had done for year after year, for hundreds of years? Had it just become part of their day-to-day life? Just a holiday? Was it something they did out of ritual because that's what they've always done? Did it no longer have any bearing or impact on how they lived day-to-day life? The Passover was an exercise that was meant to draw the people closer to God. It was meant to remind them of their amazing deliverance from their slavery in Egypt and how God mightily provided for them by delivering them from Egyptian slavery, crossing the Red Sea, eventually landing in their own land. That's what the celebration of Passover was about. And instead, it just became another commercial exercise. And for the non-Jewish people that wanted to celebrate it, we made it difficult to do. And for you and I this morning, are we here? Are we here today because it's just what we do? Because we've always done it? Is Sunday morning just a ritual for us? Is it something we've always done? Have we come here to offer our sacrifices, to drop something in the plate, to sing a song, to connect with somebody else? And then when we leave here, nothing much changes on Monday, nothing much changes Tuesday. Nothing much changes when we go to our communities, when we go to our places of work, when we go with our friends or our other family. We find ourselves in a place where we're doing something that prevents other people from worshiping. I can be rest assured that Jesus wouldn't be okay with that. And if we've turned our worship experience, our participation in worship, into just something that's ritual that no longer has meaning or impact in our lives, I can be pretty sure that Jesus wouldn't be happy with that either. God, I thank you so much for the gift of your word. God, we thank you for the gift of your son. We're thankful for his life here on earth, and we're thankful for the stories and the accounts that we have and how they can shape us, inform us, and help us live life. God, we know you desire people who worship you, who nothing gets in the way of worshiping you. God, we know you that you want your churches to be places that are open to people, where people can come and come as they are and be who they are and worship you and come to you in the ways that they are right now. God, forgive us. Forgive us this morning, God, if there are things in our lives that have taken over your place in our souls. And Father, forgive us as a church if there's anything that we do individually or collectively that makes it more difficult for people to worship you. May we leave here a people changed. May we leave here a people, God, who live out your truth and your calling in our day-to-day lives. It's in your name we pray these things. Amen. Thank you for coming out this morning. Have a great rest of the day. You're dismissed.